Welcome to Through the Bible with Les Feldman, a 30-minute walk through the Scriptures, teaching in-depth Bible truths that change people's lives. Now, here's your host, Les Feldman.
Okay, it's good to have everybody back, and I guess by the time I get back there, everything's gone. But anyway, we're glad you're back, and for those of you joining us on television, you don't know what you're missing by not being able to come in on a Wednesday afternoon, because we just have a good time, don't we? It's a good afternoon, well spent. But again, we want to thank those of you out there for all your support, your kind letters. My, how we love the letters. And your financial support, your prayers. We can't do it without it. No, that's all there's to it. All right, we're going to continue our study now for the third time on the various descriptions of the rock or the stone of Scripture, which is always Jesus Christ. Not Peter, it's Jesus. And we have to keep that straight, because only one verse that we looked at in the first half hour where there is a possibility of confusion that it could be Peter, but it isn't. Because, again, I always tell people on a lot of these things, even though Scripture may not just definitively say something, what does the big picture tell us? See, and that's what we have to learn. What's the big picture in Scripture? And so the same way with this rock and stone deal. And when you look at the big picture, how often all through Scripture, under various circumstances, Jesus Christ is the rock and the stone. Well, we're going to look at the stone of judgment this half hour. And we're going to start back in Daniel chapter 2. Daniel chapter 2, Christ as the stone of judgment. At the end of days, it'll become a reality when the final 7 years have run their course and it's time for his second coming. And then he will fulfill this symbolic prophecy. All right, Daniel chapter 2, and again, just for a little background, you want to remember that Daniel was one of the young Israelites taken captive after the Nebuchadnezzar invasion, and the temple was destroyed, and they were taken captive down into Babylon, present-day Iraq, in the area of Baghdad. That's why, you know, all this is in the news. We're coming full circle, as we're going to see in a little bit. And so Daniel was a young Jewish lad and was part of the slave system in the palace of the king. And Nebuchadnezzar, of course, as you all remember, had a dream. He had no idea what it meant, but it disturbed him. So that meant it must be serious business. And so he tried to recover the dream. And, of course, none of his wizards or magicians could do it. But somebody thought about little old Daniel down there. And so they bring Daniel up, and Daniel not only recovers the dream, but interprets it. And it becomes then the benchmark of prophecy as we understand end time events. So we'll drop down to chapter 2, verse 31, as he recovers the dream. And we're going to take the time to read it, because even though most of you have heard it a dozen times, we know there's a lot of people out there on TV who have probably never heard it. Because these things aren't covered in church and Sunday school, are they? No, I've never heard of it. And so we're going to take advantage of our audience out there. Daniel says, "Thou, O king," verse 31, "sawest in his dream now, and behold a great image," or likeness, or we would say today, a statue. "This great image, whose brightness was exceeding, stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible," or frightening, for whatever reason. Verse 32, "This image," or this statue. Now picture in your mind the statue of a man, probably a military type. "And this image's head was of fine gold, his breast," now we're coming down through the torso, Just picture this in your mind. If I were an artist, I'd love to put it on the board, but I'm not an artist. But you start with the head, and you just come down through the torso all the way down to the feet and the toes. "So his head was made of fine gold. His breast and arms," or the upper part of the torso, "was made of silver. His lower," or the belly area, "and his thighs were of brass. His legs of iron, and his feet," part iron, part clay. And Daniel says to Nebuchadnezzar, thou sawest, or you watched in this dream, until a stone, here it comes now, you watched until a stone was cut out without hands. Now, whenever the Bible speaks of something as being done without hands, what does it indicate? Well, it's a work of God. Whatever it is, whether it speaks of the temple up in heaven that was not built with human hands, it's something that was constructed by God Himself. All right, the same way here, see? Thou, he sees a stone coming out of wherever, striking this statue or this image on its feet. All right? And broke it to pieces. Verse 35, and then was the iron and the clay. In other words, it starts at the feet. So you got to put all this in your mind's picture now. This stone cut out without hands strikes this statue on its feet, rolls it over, and like a steamroller, crushes it to pieces. See? All right, so then was the iron and the clay and the brass and the silver and the gold, starting at the feet, up the legs, over the belly, over the chest, and finally the head, all crushed and ground to powder, broken to pieces, verse 35, and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floor, and the wind carried them away, so that there was no place found for them, and the stone, here we come back now, to the crushing stone that was smiting the image, became a great mountain, and a mountain in Old Testament language is a kingdom. So here this stone now becomes the head of a great kingdom. Doesn't just fill the Middle East, but what? The whole earth. So it's going to be an earth-wide kingdom. All right, now verse 36. This is the dream. Now we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. 37. Thou, O king, art a king of kings. Now again, you have to know your ancient history. Babylon, under Nebuchadnezzar, was the first great military consort. There had been tribal wars, sure, for hundreds and hundreds of years. But Nebuchadnezzar, ruling there in Babylon, became the first visible Gentile empire. And of course, they had conquered many of the countries around them. But they were the first. And he had absolute dictatorial rule. He didn't have a Congress. He didn't have a cabinet. He had nothing. He was absolute in his own power. All right, so consequently, he's called the King of Kings. Verse 37, for the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom, power, and strength, and glory. Verse 38, wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field, and the fowls of heaven, he has given in thy hand. In other words, he had absolute control, like no one had ever done before. And he has made thee ruler over them all, thou art the head of gold. All right, then you come down, and it's just a quick review now then, of the unfolding of Gentile history. And that's why history and Bible study go so well together. You got to get a little glimpse of history, or this is all Greek to you. But you see, as soon as Babylon became a great, glorious nation and empire, with one of the most beautiful cities in the then known world, with all of its hanging gardens, then naturally, what boils up amongst the enemy? Envy. Jealousy. And they're going to want it. See, that's why I am a proponent of defense. If America was to lay down our defense with all of our natural resources, with our system of living, the world would come in and take us in a minute. Because that's the way it's always been, beloved, and these pacifists can go fly a kite. They're as wrong can be. You have to defend what you've got or you'll lose it. Oh, it happened to Babylon, the greatest empire at that time. But bubbling underneath was this envy from the other areas. And so up comes another empire, the Medes and Persians, right next door. See? All right? And so after thee shall rise another kingdom inferior to thee, and another. We skip over the second one, which is the Medes and the Persians, and we jump right over to another one, which was down to the brass part of the image or the statue, which was the Greek Empire. And it shall bear rule over all the earth. Well, now let's just reconstruct. After Babylon became the great, beautiful city and its empire, then next door, which is present-day Iran and those Arab nations, they rose up, defeated the Babylonians, and established their kingdom, the Medes and the Persians, Artaxerxes and Cyrus and some of those guys. But as time went by, according to the dream, a third empire would come up and overrun the Medes and the Persians. And that was Alexander the Great. You've all studied Alexander back in grade school. Well, he was the third of these prophesied Gentile empires. Alexander conquered everything clear to the Ganges River of India and all the way back west as far as Turkey. He didn't, and Greece. He didn't get to Rome, but he got as far as Greece. Then what? Well, his empire held for a couple 300 years, and it began to weaken, and up came the Romans. That's the fourth empire. All right, now that's the next one then, see? Verse 40, the fourth empire, or the fourth kingdom. Speaking of this statue, the head of gold, Babylon, the shoulders and chest of silver, which was the Medes and the Persians, the belly, the Grecian Empire under Alexander, the legs of the Roman Empire. All right, that's the fourth kingdom. And it shall be as strong as iron. Now, I think you all are aware of the power of the Roman military. And it crushed in pieces and subdueth all things, and as iron that breaketh all these, it shall break in pieces and bruise. And then verse 41, whereas thou sawest the feet and the toes, part of potter's clay and part iron. In other words, it was fragile. It did not have the strength of pure iron itself, but it was an admixture. And it was partly the kingdom that would be divided, but there shall be in it the strength of iron, for as much as thou sawest iron mixed with clay. Now, if you know anything about metals, you know that iron mixed with clay is like trying to mix cement with plain ordinary dirt. It just won't work, will it? If you're going to mix concrete, you have to have the right kind of sand, or you won't have concrete that's worth anything. Well, it's the same way with metals. If you're going to mix iron and clay, it's absolutely impossible to have any strength. It'll crumble. All right, so this is what a picture of that particular empire. Now, verse 42, and as the toes of the feet were part iron and part clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. All right, now then, with Bible scholars and the people who teach eschatology, are convinced that the fourth empire was the ancient Roman Empire, but this next empire is what we see coming on the scene today, and I still hold to Western Europe. A lot of the prophecy people are now moving to the Middle East because of Islam, but I refuse to do that. I still maintain Western Europe is going to be this final empire, the mixture of iron and clay, because even the original 10 nations that started right after World War II have all been so nationalistic, they cannot work together. They have various ethnic backgrounds, they have all different languages, and so they finally got a common currency, but they are still an admixture of people. And so consequently, they will not have that singleness of purpose like the Nazis did in Germany and so forth. And that's what I feel will be the end time empire. Now, a lot of people, now I'm digressing again, a lot of people are getting the idea that now the Antichrist has to be a Muslim because of the increase in all they're doing. Well, it could well be. Because what is Europe fast becoming? Muslim. It's so fast, it's scary. England especially. So if I'm going to hold these 10 nations of the common market as they first came about, and I still do, even though there are 15 or 20 others, those original 10 still have the core of power in the European community. All right. If indeed the Antichrist comes out of that and he's a Muslim, no problem, because Europe is mostly Muslim already. And so don't fall for the idea that it can't be the 10 nations of Europe anymore, because it's going to be a Muslim Antichrist. No problem. Now, I'll tell you, while I'm on that, because I'm getting so many letters, they're beginning to ask me now, well, Les, is something else going to come up beside the European community? No, I do not think so. Now, I didn't intend to do this, so this is free for nothing. Come over to Daniel chapter 9. I want to set people straight. Don't fall for all these little gimmicks. The final empire is still going to be Western Europe, because it's out of Western Europe that the Antichrist will come, albeit he may be a Muslim, and we understand that that's no problem. But you come down to Daniel chapter 9. Now, this may be throwing me off schedule, but can't help it. Daniel chapter 9. Here we have the final 490 years of prophecy concerning the nation of Israel, and most of you know all about this. And we come all the way down to verse 26, and we're getting ready now to be introduced to the Antichrist for the first time, if I'm not mistaken, in the Old Testament. Verse 26, after the 62 weeks, and Messiah is cut off. In other words, after 483 years, leaving seven. So after the 483 years, Messiah is cut off, not for himself. He didn't die for anything he had done. Now here it comes, and we take this slowly. The people of the prince that shall come. Now, who's the prince that's coming? The Antichrist. All right. The Antichrist is going to come out of this people that shall come. And what is that empire going to do to Jerusalem? Destroy it. See? And the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city, Jerusalem, and the sanctuary, the temple, and the end thereof shall be of the flood, and to the end war and desolations, and so on and so forth. All right, so what that verse tells us is that the coming Antichrist will come out of the same empire that destroyed Jerusalem and the temple in 70 A.D. Well, anybody knows what empire did that? Rome. No doubt about it. All right, even though Rome as an empire went into the dustbin of history, as I usually put it, yet since World War II, what are we seeing? It's coming back up. Only it's not coming back up as a Roman empire headquartered in Rome under a Caesar. Instead, now it's coming up more or less as a democracy of 10 nations, and that's where the 10 toes come in at. All right, now the first argument, yeah, but they're already up to what, 28 or 30 nations? But you know what? Those original 10 still are at the core of everything with the European community, and I read one time not too long ago, they have veto power. So they're still in total control. All the others are just satellite nations. All right, so here we have it. That we have to have a revived Roman Empire coming out of Western Europe, and out of that empire will come the Antichrist, and he in turn, of course, will become then a world ruler. All right, so much for that. Digress. Come back with me to Daniel chapter 2. So what Daniel is really prophesying here is the unfolding of the Gentile empires beginning with Nebuchadnezzar in 606 B.C. So between 600 B.C. and Christ's first advent, all four empires came and went. Well, Rome hasn't gone yet, but they will. All right, so the Babylonians came and went, the Medes and Persians came and went, the Greeks came and went, and Rome is holding forth during Christ's first advent. Then they disappeared. All right, but now here we are 2,000 years later, and if you know anything about everyday news, what four empires are again in there? Iran. That was what? That was Persia, see? That was the second empire. Baghdad. Our boys are over there fighting every day. What is it? That first empire. It's in the news. And then what was the third empire? Greece. And Syria was the key player so far as Israel is concerned. Syria is in the news every day. And then our common market, or the European Union, is the fourth, and it's in the news every day. So here we are. 2,000 years later, we've come full circle. All these empires are now evident in the business and the production of the world. They've all got their fingers in the pie. Okay, now let's read on in chapter 2. Let's see, I got down about as far as verse 41, I think. And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of potter's clay, part iron, the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it the strength of iron. All right, now verse 42, and as the toes of the feet were part iron, part clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong. All right, then verse 43. And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men. In other words, those nations are coming together and making a loose-knit democratic government. Then come down to verse 44. And in the days of these kings, in other words, when all these Gentile empires are back in the news every day, as we see them as I stand here, then shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms. See? And then verse 45. For as much as thou sawest that the stone, here we go again, a complete repetition of what the first part of the chapter talked about, that this coming stone will hit that empire that is ruling at the time, which will be the revived Roman Empire, headed up over in Western Europe, under an Antichrist that will come out of it someplace. And then all these others, Iran, Assyria, Iraq, they're all going to be smashed to smithereens like the dust of the threshing floor. All right, for the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, verse 45, and it broke in pieces, see? The iron and the brass, the common market as we now know it, which will be ruling during the tribulation under the Antichrist, the clay, the silver, the gold, and it will be completely annihilated so that now then you can come over to chapter 7. Verse 13 and 14, as a result of that crushing stone coming down on these end-time governments and economics, or economies, whatever you want to call it, the world system under the Antichrist, and here's its final end. This is the crushing of the stone. Verse 13, I saw in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man came with the clouds of heaven and came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. God the Son comes before God the Father, and the Father now in turn gives unto him dominion and glory and a kingdom that all people, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall never pass away. All right, now then, in the few minutes we have left, let's jump all the way up to Revelation chapter 19, when now we see the same stone, but we have different language. Revelation 19, but it's the same crushing stone of Daniel. And my, we can get excited, because I think we can just about see it coming over the horizon. Revelation 19, verse 11. And this is just another way of putting the stone cut out without hands. Verse 11, and I saw heaven open, and behold, a white horse, and he that sat upon him was called Faithful and True. And in righteousness, see, oh, it's going to be total fair. You know, let me stop a minute. The unbelieving world, they hear this and they think, what kind of a God is this anyway? A God that's going to kill millions and millions of people? That's not a God of love. Well, of course not. He's been a God of love for 6,000 years. He has never brought in that kind of judgment until here. Now, even the flood, you know, I've said this before. See, the flood was a judgment, absolutely, because of their ungodliness. But I read again the other night in a scientific journal where their description of the flood was almost identical with when I taught Genesis 6 20 years ago, wasn't it? A long time ago. You remember how I made the point? It wasn't the 40 days of rain that drowned the people, for goodness sakes. But what happened? Within the first 24 hours, the fountains of the deep opened up, and it was instantaneous destruction. Instant. They never knew what hit them. Well, this scientist was explaining it, how the tectonic plates were moving underneath and all this. See, and I just get goosebumps. Well, that's what I've always said. It wasn't the 40 days of rain. It was that breaking up of the fountains of the deep. All right. Now then, here we have the judgment of God because His grace has run its course. Nobody has to go to that horrible place we call the lake of fire. Nobody. Everyone's sin is already paid for. And all they have to do is believe it, but they will not. You know, I mentioned in my seminar in Charlotte the other day, and I made it a point. Don't get discouraged when we realize that people who think like we do are in a small minority. It's always been that way. God has never had the majority. 8 people in the flood. Isaiah said a very small remnant. And the other one, Elijah, he thought he was the only one. And so it's always been. God has never had the many. But anyway, here we come to that smiting stone who is going to now come not as the stone rejected of the builders, but He's going to come as the stone of judgment. And the second coming, of course, says it all. I haven't got time enough, but you can read Revelation 19 when you get home. The second coming of Christ, when He's going to come and become absolute sovereign, King of kings and Lord of lords, not just over Israel, over the whole world.
Thank you for watching Through the Bible with Les Feldick. Through the Bible is a partner-supported ministry. If this program has been a help to your study of the Scriptures and you'd like to see others enjoy the teaching, your support would be greatly appreciated. Write to us at Les Feldick Ministries, 30706 West Lona Valley Road, Kenta, Oklahoma, 74552. Or call 1-800-369-7856. Remember, all programs are available in printed form, audio cassette, and videotape. Be sure to tune in next time to Through the Bible with Les Feldick.